Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the gang, you know, the one you never asked to be a part of. You are listening to the Grief Gang podcast with me, your host, Amber Jeffrey. This podcast has been created to tackle the tough but important conversations around grief with authenticity, realness, and having a laugh whilst we're at it. Look, we're all going to experience grief at some point in our life, in some way or another. So it's good to talk about it so that it's not much of a nightmare when it comes knocking at our doors. Grief can be incredibly lonely and isolating, but you don't have to feel lonely alone. On this podcast, you will hear various different stories and experiences, ones that will uplift you, inspire you, break your heart, mend your heart, and get you asking yourself some big questions. Some of these stories are my own, some are from the wonderful growing Grief Gang community, and some are from the incredible guest interviews. You will most likely cry. I hope somewhere along the line you can get a giggle in. But I promise you, you will learn something. I haven't got a clue what you'll take away, but I know you will take away something. So this might be weird to say given the context, but happy listening. Well, Grief Gang, where do I even begin to try and give you a synopsis to this episode? To sum it all up in a nutshell, you're basically about to hear an hour of me getting some free therapy. I'm not even joking. So if that's not your bag, you can switch off now. But if I tell you what the therapy is centered around, perhaps you might stay. Today, Grief Gang, I am talking all about the surviving parent. So full caveat, actually, today's episode is going to be very heavily based on the loss of a parent and being the child. Oh, dropped my phone. Jesus. Being the parent, the child after, you know, a parent has died. And the complexities, can you hear the little nervousness in my voice? That may come around that. And more excitingly, I decided I need to discuss this with somebody else and basically dig up all this trauma and unpack it with somebody else. And I have got no one other than Julia Samuel, MBE. get that MBE in, babe. She is. You should know who Julia Samuel is by the time you are listening to this podcast. Julia Samuel is the bad bee of grief. She is leading psychotherapist, author, fellow podcaster, patron of Child Bereavement UK. Like, she is the queen of grief. And you, if you don't already listen to her podcast, Therapy Works, you should. But Julia is a very highly esteemed and well-respected voice in the grief space. And I fully, fully echo that of love her, adore her, have the privilege of getting to know her and build a relationship together. And this episode is off the back of me being on her podcast. And I wanted to talk with her about the surviving parent and the relationship with that of parent and child and how it can change and how we can fix some things. And very much at the center of this episode, it is about when the other parent moves on romantically. When your parent gets a new boyfriend, girlfriend, partner, wife, whatever it is, starts dating again, and you're not entirely sure how to feel, or maybe you feel good, maybe you don't. Just exploring that. So I don't want to have too much of a rambly intro, but that is what today's episode is all about. It's raw. I can't lie. It's fucking raw on my side. I think it's possibly the most vulnerable I've been in a very long time. And actually, like, being inquisitive about why I've been ticking the way that I tick and reacting certain ways in the relationship with my surviving parent, my dad. Can you hear the nervousness in my voice? Because it is, but I'm really, really grateful to Julia for doing this with me and for allowing me and for, you know what, for giving me some hard truths and some honest truths that I've known deep down, but she just allowed me the space to explore that. I guess that is obviously the signs of a very great psychotherapist, right? It's what she does for a living. So without further ado, I'm going to let you listen to my therapy session all about the surviving parent. Hello, Julia. Thank you so, so much for joining me today. I, as I was saying, don't think that there'd be anybody else that I would want to have this conversation with. And I think potentially by the end of this recording, we may find out why. But thank you for joining me. How are you today?
I'm extremely well, Amber, and honoured to be on your podcast. And I always, always value and get something from our conversation. So I'm looking forward to whatever it is that you want to talk about.
Likewise. And I think, do you know what, for me, Julia, you know, I've been doing this podcast for 4 years. And since the beginning, and since coming and starting and being immersed in this world, you've always been at the top of my list to have as a guest. And you're probably sort of thinking, well, why is it taking us 3 to 4 years?
Exactly. What the F? Why is it taking you so damn long, woman?
No, I'm so sorry.
Excuse me.
I know. But you know what it is? I've been just, because you are so, like, just a wealth of knowledge, and it's almost like I didn't want to, it sounds so weird, like, to not waste your time, but I wanted to have something where I was like, I know you know, the conversation you have, there can be so the same conversation, almost like wanted to bring something new or just something where my guard would come down and I'd just be like, oh, come on, Julia, let's go at it. And off the back of our conversation on your brilliant podcast, which potentially by the time this comes out, it might have been aired already, but people will get the gist of by the end of this recording today of what part of that episode struck a chord with me that ignited me to finally take my finger at my ass and go, Julia, will you come on the pod and talk about this with me?
Great.
And you did it so brilliantly in that episode. I mean, I walked away from our recording just feeling so, like, my shoulders felt like they were up here for any benign reason before, and I just went, okay. And it just, like, untied a knot in something where I was like, okay, I've untied that knot and we need to explore why that knot is there and keeps recurring and still is today. But before we get into the topic today, I'm sure we're going to go to great, great lengths because it's so varied. Would you mind, Julie, just telling the audience, I mean, I'm absolutely sure they already do, because if they're listening to me and follow me, they know that I love you and your work and we've worked together plenty of times. But who are you, Julia?
Well, at my most personal, and probably most importantly, I am someone who values loving and relationship. And that gets played out in many different ways. I mean, as a wife, as a mother, as a grandmother, as a friend. And then professionally, I'm a psychotherapist and I've been a therapist for like 33 years. I worked in the NHS supporting families when a child and baby dies for 25 years. I've written 3 best-selling books. I think the one most relevant to your audience is GriefWorks. I've developed a GriefWorks app, which has been kind of 5-star rated, is really good. And I have now my own podcast, Therapy Works, with my 2 therapist daughters, who you know, Emily, and my other daughter, Sophie. And I'm a columnist. I now have a column on the Times Luxury. Yeah. But I actually think the only thing that matters in all of that is connection and relationship and love.
Totally. I love that you started that off with saying, you know, by first off, yeah, I'm a person who values this, because I think so often, you know, you are held as, you know, St. Julia. You are St. Julia to us.
Oh, my God, I found a patron of Child Bereavement UK. That was a big world, like, shit, I forgot that one. That's a big one.
Sorry, guys. We'll edit it so that's at the beginning of all
the time. No, don't. Leave it like that. It's better. I am so far from being a saint. As you know me, Amber, I am the reverse of a saint. I am as much a bitch as anybody else.
But you know what? You're a lovely biatch as well. So, but just, you know, above all of the titling and all of, you know, the years of your career behind you, you know, we hold you with such high respect and knowledge, and like, you're a real just warmth to you. But before all of that, you are a human being. You are a mother, a wife, a family member, a grandmother, who out of all the titles, all the success, at the core of it is connection and just like, these are the things that matter most to me.
By far.
Totally. At the end of the day, you know, as I think I said on your pod when we were talking, you know, what to think about. And I was like, I think about deathbed me, of like, all this stuff, it's brilliant, it's great, and all these successes and all these great milestones and things to do. But at the end of the day, on your deathbed, you're like, oh, what really matters is those people who are around that, those bedsides. And so in the stick of the mud of life today, when we get all wrapped up in it, you go, oh, forget all that shit, forget all that noise. To touch on what today, I brought you here today for Julia, because like I said, I don't think there's anybody else I wanted to and like needed to discuss this with, because it's been a topic that has been brought up a lot to me in the Grief Gang community. People have come forward to me and asked me certain questions. And I've definitely been a bit hesitant to take a deeper dive in, because it meant for me to take a deeper dive into it. If I was going to source potentially helpful advice for my community on this topic, I potentially had to go to the place with them too. And that's how it's felt for me. Maybe that's not a necessity, but it's felt like that. It's felt like the mirror has finally been held up and go, Amber, I think we should talk about this part of your grief. And that is to do with the surviving parent. So today's episode will probably be quite predominantly about the death of a parent and then the surviving parent and the widow. But I'm sure that along the way we will find areas that we can relate it to different types of losses, but at this present moment it is predominantly to the surviving parent and the complexities with that, how the relationship can change, and a little bit for me of like my present situation of the surviving parent is that surviving parent moving in a different relationship, and moving, even with that I can't even say like moving on, It's like, even saying that, like they're moving on or moving forward into a different relationship.
Can I point something out? You also said the surviving parent, not my surviving parent. So you've made it objective, not subjective. Like it's something outside.
I think I'll be doing
you.
That a lot. I'm talking, as if it is something external, because it's very much at the centre of my world at the moment. I do the surviving prayer, and I'm not applying it as if it's something into my world, which it very much is. And I'll get on to a bit later the question that you asked me in the podcast that initially sparked this, and we started going into those kind of thoughts and feelings that feel really wrong but are quite normal after the death of someone in your life, and kind of these intrusive thoughts perhaps. But I suppose really to start off where to give you a more flavour, though we had the lengthy talk after, but to give more the audience, I suppose, for the first time, is to talk about the surviving parent in my, we'll eat the vegetables first, of when the surviving parent moves on into a different relationship. So we'll start there, and then we'll go into a bit of what it's like to support the surviving parent, because I know there's people who listen who have the experience of their parents were together and now that parent is bereaved and they are struggling to support that parent. That parent has almost flipped, and the traditional role of the parent looking after the child has changed, and it's now child looking after parent. So my experience is my mum and dad separated quite a long time before she died, about 5-6 years, and it was a very tumultuous marriage, and never divorced but separated, and mum has died in the tragic and quick way. And so they were not together in a loving relationship once she died. And so my dad had partners since they had separated. But once she died, it felt, looking at my dad's grief and his outward expression of grief, very much felt as if like this was a husband who has lost his wife, like his marital wife who he is still with. And so it felt like that for quite a few years afterwards. But then as time has moved forward, he was dating anyway. They weren't together. So, but it's at the point now where it's very serious. And it's got to a point where I know for sure for me, there's an undercurrent of feeling orphaned. That's the biggest thing for me, of feeling orphaned and the abandonment there.
So Amber, what you're recognizing is, despite the kind of external logic that your mum and dad weren't married when she died, he already had other relationships, and maybe those other relationships were the cause of their separation, so there's something in that. So the history of where you get to, what has happened, influences you. But also it feels like what you're asking is, how come I feel abandoned by my father while he's investing in a new loving relationship when he'd had lots of relationships? Is that your question?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, sort of, and kind of, I think, I don't know if it's really more of a question, more of like a reflection of, although I know my dad has not abandoned me and he lives up the road and he very much is a constant in my life, it's that feeling of there's now somebody else in the conversation that occupies his time a lot. And it's so strange being 25 years of age with my own life, with my own responsibilities, my own busy calendar. But yeah, I'm still like, yeah, boyfriend and friend. And just like my fucking calendar is booked as. It's just strange of, yeah, how being at 25 years of age. And it's more like if my dad was to turn around and be like, I've got all this time in the world, and was to be knocking at my door, I'd say, Dad, please hold up. Like, I've got a life to live. But just maybe the knowing of like, oh, but my dad isn't like, I'm not like a young kid anymore. We're like, call up dad and he'll be there, or like he will in some capacity, but he is otherwise occupied. That's the short in front of it. He is otherwise occupied by an external person who I don't know from Adam, and who there's friction there anyway, but not enough to, you know, not a god awful person, but there's just this external figure now. And who are you, and why are you now taking my only surviving parent from me? That's the core of it.
Yeah. Well, you say you are taking my only surviving parent from me. It's like this woman, it's not that there's anything wrong with her, but you hate her because she is taking your only surviving parent from you. And can I kind of feed into that? And I know you're laughing, but actually also it's like you put your hand on your mouth. It's like you're having feelings you think you shouldn't have. Is first of all that with a parent, always a baby Amber shows up, a five-year-old Amber, an eight-year-old Amber, 10-year-old Amber, a 15-year-old Amber, an 18-year-old Amber, and a 25-year-old Amber. So with a parent, there are always the many versions of a child in you. And when something changes and their level of attention, you know, the beam of his light, as it were, isn't focused on you, it's focused on someone else, you will feel that injury. And your injury is intensified by the fact that your mother has died. So a new loss always brings back a previous loss.
Yeah.
And the kind of third thing to say is that feelings are not facts, but also we can't shape our feelings into facts. So that, you know, you kind of feel like, Amber, I'm 25. I'm, you know, a professional, successful woman who's got my own life and my own partner and my own kind of adult self. Why am I caring about my dad moving his attention to this woman? And you kind of want to be able to shape your feelings to fit that narrative. And the reality is there's probably a lot of unresolved losses with your dad from when he left your mum. Lots of unresolved questions and maybe furies and protection of your mum. So I remember a close friend of mine talking about his mother who died, and the father was having a new relationship and he was angry with his dad. And I said to him, your mother's fight is not your fight. And he, all these years later, still does not agree with me. So there's a lot of complexity that you, that, so which one of those is it, the young you? Well, it's all of it, isn't it?
I think definitely hearing you both say then of like, the multiple younger versions of me are still showing up today. Absolutely. But then that also feeds into past losses. And I think that's something that a lot of people in grief gang who've come to me and said, I think of, it is more than just, oh, this new person has come into their life, or that your surviving parent is looking to date and find love again. There's some type, because I hear some stories of people who are like, I'm so elated for my surviving parent to find love. And I'm like, what? I'm like, how? And it's like, but if you were to strip back, there may be a healthier history, or just grievances have been aired, and that those previous losses have been done and put to bed. Whereas when this big, it's almost like I found my reason to go off the fucking chain at him. And, but it's not, it's for a lot of other stuff as well. And it's like got a long old receipt of stuff before, and I've just found my moment. But I totally hear an echo when you said of you, I can take the fact of, yeah, I'm 25 and I have my own life and all this. Why do I feel like that? Because that's totally where my, it's like the logical and illogical part of my brain goes, Amber, why are you being so bothered? Because on day to day, like it's not a day to day grievance, but just when it's in my face, it's like, oh, like this big red angry Amber comes out and they're just battling with each other. But now they've got so tired of arguing with each other, they're just like, oh, both exhausted, both exhausted.
So I tell you that rather than battling with each other, give them both space, allow them both parts of you to speak, allow your heart to speak, allow all of the unresolved injuries and losses and furies with your dad to speak, not necessarily to him. I mean, maybe to him, but whether he's up for listening to them, you know, only you can kind of know. But also allow the logical side. So it's like, it's not like a standoff, like one needs to win. It's like there are many aspects of you that need to be heard. And I mean, you know, the other thing, I remember a young woman whose mum had died. She died by suicide. And about 5 years later, she was living with her dad. She was at university. So she was younger than you, but not much. Had a new partner, and seeing the new partner put clothes where her mum's clothes had been in the cupboard.
Yeah.
And it, you know, she said, I know I want my dad to be happy. And I do not want this woman in my mother's wardrobe. I do not want this woman in my kitchen. I do not want this woman anywhere near me.
It's like if we could have like a stick and a sage, like, get away.
It's not your territory. Get out.
It's
not
territorial. It is. Oh, God.
And then this new woman, who you say is perfectly nice, but you have issues, she's probably getting a version of your dad that maybe your mum didn't get. Maybe she's...
This is true.
She's also living. Your mum isn't living.
This is true. And it's, you know, like, that's a part too that I've thought of. Because I've gone to the other side and thinking, well, why is she so obsessed with him? Like, he's this, he's that. So I've started berating
not only her. What's
she
doing with him?
What does she fucking see in him? Like, they're both in tandem getting it in the neck. They're both in tandem just getting it both.
Do they listen to your podcast, by the way?
And do you know what they might do? I would say, you know what, listen to the episode and let's talk from there. But to be honest, all this stuff at present, that my father and I, we have had conversation. I think we're now letting it just sit and then coming back. But there is, yeah, totally aspects of that, of, yeah, of he's done this and he's done that. But actually recognizing that my parents' marriage didn't work out for a reason.
Or for no reason, but it didn't work out. I mean,
it just didn't work out. And for whatever reason, they weren't together at the time when she died, and that relationship didn't work. And is that to say that my dad is potentially a commitment phobe? Maybe. Or maybe he just wasn't happy in a marriage with my mother. And it's that, you know, it's the what if in the conversation. Maybe he does present himself as a different version to what I knew him as, a husband to my mother. And therefore going, I can't. Or have to, of trying to learn to go, he's potentially not the same marital or spouse that he was to your mum, and maybe he's changed. But then more so thinking, why do I give a fuck? Like, if he hasn't changed, it's not, if he wants to do what he wants to do to this woman, what he did to mum, then like, that's more for him that he's not grown in the past decade. But yet being just so hell bent, it's really, really rocked in the past year. But then there's different things that have happened, of, and it's definitely, it's more so of obviously having a parent move on after your other parent has died, of how different traditions then will change, obviously. So now there is a different person in the picture. And for example, the biggest gripe of as of very recent was this Mother's Day just gone of, normally we'd spend it all together as a family. My brother would spend it with his spouse and their children, so they'd have their own little Mother's Day there. And we'd normally have a dinner and whatnot, and Dad would be involved that, because although my parents were separated, that's one thing I could never, ever berate my dad for, of, he was very much team talk about mum after she died. Like, he didn't put her in a box and put her under the bed. Like, he went, yeah, we will talk. And I've been very lucky when people said, oh, my other parent's been shit. I'm like, oh no, mine's actually been pretty good. And you can see where this is going, since the partner, it's not been so much so. And so then therefore that's fed into my notion of she's a witch.
Well, she feels like she's stolen not just your dad, but your dad who loved your mum and wanted to keep on the relationship with your mum. So there's a bit of your mum and the traditions that have become less reliable. And everything, when you're grieving, feels so rickety that you want to be able to rely on at least Mother's Day. And if that feels wobbly, it really pushes your buttons.
Yeah. I think that's what, for me, was it's the days when you really feel like you need that surviving parent to show up, and then they don't, and you're like, oh, wow, I can't even depend. That's, again, back to dependency. Dependency and that going, oh God, I can't, even on this day, I can't go back to being like 19-year-old Amber and just going back to that kind of kid stage and being looked after rather than having to be the one to keep the shit together for everybody and be, well, again, that's my own shit of taking that on, but just someone else to go, oh, I know it's a shit day or potentially a shit day. Do you want to just hang out? Be like, yeah. But instead he had dinner with her and her mum. So.
Oh, that was said with Amber, that was said with so much venom, but beneath the venom was so much pain. I mean, I know you're laughing, but I imagine that there's a lot of hurt there that you feel very deeply.
Yeah, it is. It's, do you know, over the last year, the pain has been there, and it's because I think I've got to the point where, and I'm not normally somebody who will like laugh through the pain and laugh through the trauma. I do feel I am quite poised and I will more cry out, or I'm not afraid to face that pain. But because this has been such an ongoing pain, it's like, if I don't laugh, I will just continuously cry. And I don't think I can cry for 3, 6, 5 days a year. But more of just almost finding a bit of that grit to just go, well, I have to get up and keep on and have the conversation when we're ready to. And we've had the conversation and we're just letting the dust settle. But it's a pain spot because it's, at the end of the day, there's going to have to be compromise. And I feel that it will be from me. And there will be a compromise of, or a realization for me that will have to come of, Amber, this is life and this is what happens. And how are we going to get through it? How are we going to build a supportive system? How are we going to protect, potentially put some boundaries in place that aren't going to upset everybody, or that, you know, have quite clearly spoken out about as to why? But that's the tricky part.
You know, the task of mourning, and this is a, this is grief for your mum, and it's also a kind of living loss. Mm. And the task of mourning is to face the reality, a reality you don't want and you don't choose. And this is a reality that you don't want. Mm. And it is one, if you're going to have a relationship with your dad, that you are going to have to find a way of accommodating and living with.
It is,
and for that, Amber Jeffrey, you... can't avoid but feeling the pain of it. So I know that you're very reluctant, because it feels like if you start crying, you're going to cry 365 days. But probably if you let yourself really kind of say what's going on and the feelings attached to them, it probably, holding them down You know, I say this, holding them down is the thing that blocks you accommodating and learning to live with this new loss. And the things that you do to block them, being busy, keeping going, being strong, is the thing in the end that does you harm.
Yeah.
So by being self-compassionate, by legitimizing the real loss that you feel around this, and putting the kind of logic to one side and allowing yourself to feel all of these different losses.
And to go just blurt it all
to
out.
To go emotional.
To the dark place. Or not even not the dark place. Like even that I already put a negative connotation to it of go to the dark place, go to the, because it feels like it could go to an ugly place within me. Like ugly things could be said, ugly things could be thought. Which actually, you know what, segues quite well into the topic of intrusive thoughts. I get confused between intrusive and impulsive, and you'll be able to decipher a bit more for us in terms of the context what we were going to talk about. And it was on your podcast, and we kind of dipped our toes in the conversation that we're having now. And you asked me a question. I'm so glad that you asked it, because I knew as soon as you asked it, and then once it airs, I know so many people will go, oh my God, thank fuck someone said it. Oh, like just, or even you asked it and me responded to it. And you just simply asked, do you ever wish that it was the other parent?
Did the wrong parent die?
Did the wrong parent die? And I have never, ever, ever been asked that. But I know people, especially in like conversations that I've been having very recent in the last year, like talking about like with my dad, I know people have definitely thought, my God, this girl most definitely wishes that it was the other parent. And it was like liberating, but scary to say, because I know it is absolutely something that many people have thought. And I hope anyone who's listening today who has had that thought knows that you're not alone in it. And kind of, I've even to put you on the spot, Julie, and say like, why do we think that if there is a genuine answer to that? But I feel like for me, in the times when I have felt or had that very passing, fleeting thought, and it's a really scary thought, because when it comes to your mind, you go, oh my God, I can't believe I just thought that, let alone if I said it out loud or something. But all the moments when it has passed through my mind have been moments for me when my dad has really let me down and not shown up for me in the way that I would think my mum would have. For examples, Christmases, birthdays, stuff like that.
Milestone days.
Milestones. And just even in the everyday sometimes, just when I go, oh, you know what? Mum wouldn't have done that, or mum would have done this. God, I wish it was her here instead of him. And that's a really tricky thought to have and to express out loud, because of course, if somebody actually came to you and said, yeah, I can make that reality, I can bring your mum back and do your dad, it's very conflicting. I don't think I could actually press the button. I don't think I could go and go, no, off him, bring her back, because what the fuck? But that's where we stopped off last time with yours, and kind of, I wanted to know if, you know, have you in your career and just your thoughts on that, like how normal are we for thinking that?
Of course you're okay. Of course. And anyone who has these feelings is okay. And or thoughts. And thoughts, remember, are not wish fulfillments, that your thoughts don't become reality. And I think sometimes we're scared, you know, even having the thought, we're frightened in a kind of magical thinking that we have this perverse power and that something bad is going to happen to your dad. And, you know, I've worked with parents who, as much as they don't want it to be true, they feel their wrong child died. They had a different child that, you know, that they in some way felt was more the child that really fulfilled all their dreams and that was the child that died. And so, and you know, you said it comes up particularly at times when your mum was at her best and your dad is different. And so that's when you would miss her most. And then you would feel like, you know, it's not fair. Dad should have died and not mum.
Mm-hmm.
And just to kind of recognise that emotions and the thoughts that go with those emotions don't have morals attached to them, really. It's your actions that have morals, your behaviour. Mm. So as long as you don't act out, I wish Dad was dead.
No.
Or blame him for being alive. I think it's useful to recognise that part of what you're feeling now with his new partner could be also there's some attachment to this belief that your mum would have been different and that she would have done better with a different partner if she had one, or she wouldn't have had one, she wouldn't have left you. So I think the big message I'd like to get people to listen is not to put moral judgments on their thoughts and their feelings, but to find a way of expressing them to save people, not to everybody, but to people who they trust and value.
I can safely say, like, a thought like that hasn't even amongst the midst of what's been going on, probably because I've pushed it, I'd be like, do not think about that. Like, that's not a nice thought. But definitely, and yeah, a few early stages was like, something went wrong here in the mix up. Like, this should not have been this way. And I was just thinking then about it of when you said then about children, like certain children surviving and parents wishing for another. I found it, just thinking about it, actually, just even now, I remember, so my mum's mother passed away in childbirth about 3 weeks after she died. And therefore, so mum was motherless before she was even a month old. And her father was just left to care for her. But then my mother was raised by like her grandmothers and aunties and everything as such. Granddad went back to work and whatnot. And years later, when my mum and dad met down the line in the late 80s, early 90s, my mum, I remember, wrote to my dad, and we found all these letters after she died and going through her stuff. And she wrote once in a letter to my dad and said, I sometimes think my dad resents me for living. And I thought, oof, what a thing to carry for your... She must have been then about 20. She didn't have... She's about 24. So you're about my age. And could write in a letter, I think my dad resents me for being the one who survived. And I thought, fuck, that's a big thing to carry for your life, or feeling that knowledge, or whatever behaviours have been shown to you to express that you shouldn't have been the one that survives. And that is, I suppose, for my grandfather, acting upon that impulsive thought, not properly and physically, but very much showing you shouldn't have been the one that survived. And that, for me, I think I would know, I'd like to think and hope that I would know if I was to start expressing. And like you say, you know, kind of these thoughts, they don't have moral compasses. Like, although they're our thoughts and we have our own moral compass, would you say do they fall under an intrusive thought, would you say?
The definition of an intrusive thought is one that kind of threatens you, I guess, in some way. That it's, so that would be very subjective.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what's an intrusive thought could be what you said, and for somebody else it might not be. And I'm trying to think of the right definition for intrusive thought. The kind of aspects of ourselves that we really don't like and don't want.
Okay. Yeah.
And it could be wanting to kill someone because we're so angry.
Yeah.
It could be wanting to die because we're so angry. Mm. It could be at the most extreme and everything in between. But it's the sort of, they shock us and they take us off kind of being the versions of ourselves, off kilter, and the versions of ourselves that we prefer to be. And the piece that I think is helpful in that is when we kind of recognize that we are all of these things. We have all of these drives and thoughts and feelings. And it is really in our actions that matters. Mm. It isn't what we think. I mean, our actions include what we say to people. So, you know, recognizing that there's lots of feelings and thoughts you have about your dad, but being sensitive about what you actually say to him and how you say it to him. Not as a stick to beat him with, but as a way to build the relationship and help you him to understand you and you to understand him, to build the bridge of connection between you. Not That's as a punishment.
To punish them. And totally, I think, especially as at that child parent dynamic, even respective of mine and my dad's history of, you do look to your parent as a bit of that beating bag, or more like beat them, but you know, you can say a lot and do a lot. I feel like in mine relationships and kind of, not there's no repercussions, but I can say what I feel. I can say what I feel and not, I guess maybe probably to the detriment sometimes of being like, I have to say, we're very open, say what you feel and we'll deal with the consequences after type thing. But actually, and that was as a child, you know, as a teenager, I hate you, go away, leave me alone. I don't want you to be my dad, my mum. But then actually coming as an adult and in the situation now of actually being able to look at my dad and go, okay, you are still my dad. And I do still feel that element of comfort to say what I want and how I want it. But knowing that this is still actually just another human being in front of me. And that words hurt and that words stick and they will stay. And so how I'm saying it and what I really want to say, I can say it, but without being venomous and punishing.
Exactly. So not using your distress and hurt as a weapon of mass destruction, but starting with, when you started going out with so-and-so, I felt this. And I felt that.
Yeah.
And I know I want you to be happy. And I also feel, in seeing you happy, I miss my mum, or I'm feel angry about your relationship with our mum, with my mum. So that you own it. Mm. You don't start shouting at him for being selfish or abandoning you, or so then he has a place to meet and respond to your hurt that he can acknowledge and allow, rather than feeling that he's asking you to leave this girlfriend or change something, which isn't fair.
Yeah, and that's not the ask at all. Yeah, that's where we're having our crossed wires. I think he thinks that I want that, but it's not. And I think it's time to write a letter, methinks.
Letters are good because you can really take time to write it in a way and rewrite it until you're ready to send it.
Yeah. To take out the venomous bits that maybe might have just come out of the pen, you know, and scratch that out and start again.
And the venom is your hurt, right?
It is, yeah. I want to touch on more, and this has been great help, Julia. I feel like I've basically just booked in for an hour of therapy with you for free. Good.
Well, but I know you haven't had a good experience of therapy, but I think this is exactly the sort of thing you should take to a therapist.
I really do.
Because it isn't a one-stop shop.
It is. And do you know what? I think so much of aspects of my grief is wrapped up in this. And I did say 2023, I would try and dabble back in the therapy room. I'll take any recommendations, Julia.
I'll send you my list. I've got a list. I'll send it to you.
You send me the list. I trust your recommendations.
I think I've sent it to you already.
I probably miscellaneous'd it in my inbox. Just to be like...
Funny that. Another day.
But I wanted to touch on more of...
Can I say one more thing, Amber Jeffrey? A massive diversionary tactic is to respond to everybody else's grief and kind of speak grief.
Yeah.
It avoids your own. Doesn't avoid it, but it doesn't deal with it.
Yeah. There's definitely areas like this, and there's a deeper surface to be scratched for me. One that doesn't live on the internet or on this podcast, and that is just for me and my own healing and my own process. For me, it's just going, where do I start? Where do I pick up from? Do I pick up from mum dying pre that? For me, I feel like I search for that definitive point, but I know it's just like, go and see where you start. Go and see what, when you're sat in that chair, goes, I think I need to talk about this. And then we'll go off the branches, see of the branches, of the branches, of the branches. Yeah. Hmm. Okay. You've inspired me, I'd say.
Good. About damn time, Amber Jeffrey. Like, she takes forever to invite me on her pod. She doesn't get therapy herself.
What the fuck am I playing at? I should not be trusted with this podcast. But I want to touch on, before we kind of like loosely wrap up, of more for people with the other parent, the surviving parent, our surviving parents, of those who maybe aren't at a stage with them where they are potentially looking for other love and new relationships, and they are maybe in the throes of that very early loss. And so that child and parent dynamic can change. And it now looks like where other parent is bereaved and widowed in the aspect, and now child who has then lost their parent too is now having to look after the surviving parent whilst also holding their own grief. And I've had, and I'm sure you have as well, lots of stories, and people come and say, I feel like I'm having to put my grief aside because my parent has now lost their partner. And lots of people, as we all do, I think we've all had quite an experience of, we're grieving totally differently, like on different scales and different, and it's like, this is their partner and this is your parent. And though it is that huge loss in your dynamic, respecting that these are totally different losses all across the board of everybody in this family. But I wanted to know if you have your experience of children who have come to you for support, or just stories of having to now support the other parent and perhaps putting their grief aside. And what does that look like, kind of building a healthy parent-child relationship again after such a loss?
I think what's really, I mean, it's very common, is this is with adult children, but actually even with children, they become parentified children, where not only has one of their parents died, but the grief of the surviving parent is like they've lost that parent as well. And so they have no adult parent who's really taking care of them. And that is incredibly painful, because the outcome for children and young people whose parent dies, the biggest predictor is the capacity of the surviving parent to support their child and young person. So if the surviving parent isn't able to do that, it really is important that they get support from somewhere else, because you just can't put, they can't put their own grief to one side indefinitely. It will come out and get them in other ways, kind of other times. I've had many clients who've come to me 12 or 15 years after their parent died.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're having a breakdown, or they're, you know, incredibly ill because they've just kept pushing and pushing and pushing.
And I can imagine a lot of, do you see a lot of like resentment in those children of, I had to hold the fort down in, you know, emotionally, physically, whatever it is, for that surviving parent and in their needs. And now there's the resentment there of, where was my time to fall apart as the child?
There can be resentment. There can be, in a way, lack of resentment's even worse, because it's like they don't value their own needs. And so they're not even angry that they didn't get their needs met. They're so distanced from getting their needs met that they don't even recognise that they deserve. And it's very complicated. I mean, I think one of the big things to recognize in families is to allow difference, that every member of the family, whether it's siblings together and the parents and the grandparents, will have their own subjective experience of grief. And that will be influenced by their psychological makeup, their history of loss, the circumstances of the death, the relationship with the person that died, and the support they get after the death. And so for each family member, that will be very different, where they were in the family birth order, for instance, if it's the children. Mm. And the thing that helps in families is to allow difference, to support difference. That the teenage boy who goes clubbing at 18 is not feeling less pain than his 17-year-old brother who stays home and can't move. It's just their way of expressing it is different. And so there isn't a good or a bad way. But what really, really helps in families is communicating and finding ways of allowing everybody to voice their loss in their own way. And that can be really important. And one of the ways, quite simple ways of doing it is, for instance, if you have younger children, but actually even kind of, you know, a lot of young people are moving back home after university and because of the cost of living crisis and accommodation crisis, all of that, is to have a, like a shoebox with a little cut out, like a postbox, and to put in memories or what I miss or something in relation to the parent that died. And then every now and again, every sort of Sunday, once a month or whatever the family decide, or on, you know, high days and holidays, you tip the box out and other people who've come into the house could put in their thoughts or their memories and you just read them out.
Yeah.
And it's such a lovely non-kind of pressured way of talking about their mum or their dad.
And getting the conversation started, I can imagine.
I miss her when?
And getting that cut, because it can go for so long and for anyone, and it might feel really difficult, especially with somebody who, with their surviving parent, I've had many messages from people who say, I miss, you know, my parents so much and I want to talk, they want to talk about them.
Talk about
but
them.
The visceral pain from their other parent puts them off. They're like, they know that they're not going to remind them because they know they are living with it every day, but they're as we always in fear of, well, if I say, can we start this box or can we start talking about memories? They might think, oh, it's going to just tip them over the edge. But maybe that's just what they need. Maybe they're just harboring all these memories. And they're like, they're looking, thinking, I'm dying to talk to my kids about these memories, about their parent and stuff like that. And so it's so interesting how you can all have the same thought, but just no one's talking. But just putting that in the middle to say, let's, you know, we don't have to look at each other. Sometimes even, I've noticed even that sometimes, even when you kind of don't even look at each other and talk, how much can come out.
I think walking and talking, you hear heard me say it a million times.
Yeah.
But I think rituals, you know, like funerals, but rituals after the funeral are the most kind of productive structure to grieve, and creating rituals, whether it's always making mum's chicken soup on a Wednesday, or, you know, doing that box thing once a month, or going for a walk every other week, or going to the grave together, or, but just having rituals as a family, which are habits with soul, and with soul with an intention to remember and connect to the person that's died. And you can create any ritual you like. It can be that we all wear something of mum's or dad's, or, you know, whatever it is that works for you as a family. And then you don't have to kind of start all over again every time. It's like the, you know, the ritual is there. We do this once a month, once every 2 months.
Yeah.
We do this every Friday. And so it's kind of in place. And you don't have to fight for it. You don't have to get agreement. People who want it will show up and be part of it. And it has this structure, this beginning, middle and end, that is incredibly holding and containing, which is the thing we really need for grief. We need holding and containing when what we feel is so, as you've described so powerfully today, it's so chaotic and limitless and gives us, you know, an intensity of feeling we'd really much rather not have.
It's the rituals, and then it's the tricky, I feel like for me, we've had rituals. It's when the rituals change, as all things change.
Get dropped.
When rituals get dropped and some don't see them as an importance, but some do. And you're like, oh, hang on, we were tag teaming this ritual for years and now we're losing people by numbers.
But that's what life. I mean, that would be a very, it's not life. That could be a useful conversation with your dad or people listening to their parent, which is, I know that your life is changing and that you have this new relationship or you this new job or you, and also the thing that has really mattered and helped kind of support me is that every year we do Mother's Day lunch.
Mm.
And, you know, you can have lunch with your partner 364 days a year. Please, will you commit to have lunch with me on that Sunday?
Do you know what? It really matters to me. And do you know what? Is it too much? But also, he probably doesn't even know how much you care. I know, but then but part of me, that feels like bizarre because I feel like I do. But then, do you know what, as well? That's for me. I know there is, look, as much as I am a Taurus and I love to think that I am perfectly perfect and I'm never in the wrong, I know there is some inner work for me to do. But I feel like
maybe
I do.
Maybe he doesn't know, Amber, because you haven't told him.
Yeah, maybe. I think maybe I need to go in his calendar and go, right, these days I really, really need you.
And but you could start it by saying, Dad, I really love you. You are really important to me. And given that Mum's died, you're even in a way more important to me. So rather than beating him for being your dad, tell him you love him and that given that I love you and I really need you, can we, Dad, can you help me with this? And he's, of course he's going to say yes.
Yeah.
But if you just bollock him for not doing stuff that he doesn't know that he's meant to be doing, he'll just think, well, I mean, I just can't deal with it because I can't fix that.
Well, that's the...
You haven't been completely straight, Amber.
I'm giving him mixed signals,
It's like, but fuck off so and die. And
I love you. Be with me on Mother's Day.
Every day. I need you. I'm 4 years old.
Literally.
Like, pick me up and take me to school.
Honestly, pick me up, take me to school, cook me dinner, 5 meals a week. Like,
yeah.
But then do you know what the weirdest part is?
Wipe my bottom.
Like, there is, wipe my ass. Can you get me some nappy cream? And like, you know, it is the strangest part is that like I am in that big rage of like punishing and stuff like that. When and then in the next minute I'm like, oh, should I take him some dinner for the week? Like, I want to care for him as well. Like, I'm not a horrific daughter where I'm like, oh, I don't want to look at
daughter.
To look after him. And it's so, you're like, what are these big feelings? Like, I'm like, fuck you, hate you, get out my life. Like, I don't see you in my life. And then I want nothing but more you to be a present figure in my life and to be here. Like, because you're all I've got. You're all I've got in that parental figure, and it's to the root of that, like, you are all I've got and I will fight tooth and nail to ensure it is, even if it means fighting you as well.
But you don't need to fight him.
No.
You just need to let him know and just to remember that indifference is the opposite of love, not hate.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Where you love most, you hate most.
Yeah.
So, but how you express that hate / love will really predict the outcome of your relationship with your dad. Because if you do it in a way that is intolerable for him to hear, he will back off.
Yeah.
You know, particularly being a man of his time, he will back off.
Yeah.
And then you will really set up a horrible thing.
Yeah. To kind of come back from. And it'll be, you say things that you can't, you know, even with parents, I do think there are things you can say that
you
can't
come never
back
say.
From.
No.
There are
there are many things that we should not voice in person.
Definitely.
We can write them in a letter, not post it. We can tell our therapist. We can tell our best friend, our partner, about the other person.
Yeah.
But when we come to actually wanting to sort difficulty out and repair, how we say what's hurting us and bothering us, will make an enormous difference in how it's received and the response that we get.
Massively. Oh, okay, Julia, I knew this would be the outcome, that you've got me to think about stuff and to not be such a hothead. And to just...
You can be a hothead. I'm not saying don't be a hothead.
But basically, this is me plastering over the big crack in the wall and going, okay, let's take the plaster off. And let's see how bad the damage is with a potential professional.
And let's kind of kind to myself.
Yeah, and I think so. I think I do give myself a bit of a rap for being such a bitch.
Takes one to know.
But
one.
I know. I think this has definitely been like possibly one of the most rawest episodes for me for quite a while. I don't think I've sat, not to disrespect any other guest, but in a space where I felt so safe, and you know me and personally, and we speak, and just to really let that guard down. So I think, yeah, that listening back to this, I'll be like, okay, this has been raw, but I hope that, and I know through the conversations I've had with people, that this should, you know, provide some support and just knowledge that you're not alone in feeling that anger, that rage, that confusion. And just to hear from Julia as well today that this is pretty normal and how you can support yourself through it as well. So Julia, thank you. I mean, I knew I would come out with, again, my shoulders down a bit more and going, okay, there is a path.
It's wonderful talking to you, Amber, and I really hope people listening can just even take one thing from it for themselves, because the thing we need most when we're grieving is the support. And a lot of that is how we give ourselves permission to support ourselves and being self-compassionate and kind to ourselves. And you know how much esteem and warmth I hold you in, Amber. So it's, and that we have fun. It's good.
We do. This is the part I thought, you know what? I knew it wouldn't be. I knew you'd give me some tough truths. Like I said to you before, you do exude that mum energy. You are the mum energy of that, them tough truths, but with a bit of laughter and a bit of humour, of just like, what the fuck are you doing? Sort it out.
You want your dad's attention, but you're just giving him a hard time. Why will he be giving you attention? He'll like, oh my God, I just...
Julia, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Oh my God. Thanks for tuning in this week. I truly appreciate every single person who listens to the show. By doing so, you're actually helping more people find the show and in turn support themselves. You can keep up to date and become part of the Grief Gang community by following us on social media platforms such as Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok. Check out our website and blog too, and if you fancy, you can sign up to our newsletter, where you will receive regular emails and first to knows on events and workshops. All links for the above are in the episode footnotes. Big love, look after yourself, and I will see you next week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.